welcome back to Tasteland. I am your co-host, Francis Sierra.
And I'm Daisy Alieta.
And Happy New Year, Daisy.
Thank you. Happy 2025. No better way to start off the year than with a low-stakes Tasteland episode, because we are continuing our mailbag questions.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the post office. You know, this may be its last year, so let's enjoy this mailbag idea as long as we can.
Oh, I can't even think about it. And as you might have guessed, this was pre-recorded, so, you know, if we're missing anything major in the world news.
Sorry.
You know, the world does slow down over the holidays, though. I don't know if you've noticed.
Wow, I actually had not noticed that.
Yeah, nothing major ever happens, because then journalists would have to work on Christmas.
Yeah. You know, I believe it was Lennon who said there are podcasts where a lot happens and there are podcasts where not much happens.
Wow. You got that in there. Tom, don't delete that.
Oh my God. Well, he never does.
Speaking of this. Oh, see, you're saying Lennon. But speaking of the other Lennon, I don't know if we've ever been over this, but like, who's your favorite Beatle?
Well, if you ask me this as a kid, it would be Ringo. But I think as I've matured, it's more George Harrison.
It's obviously George.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah. Should we start with this question from Abby?
Yes, we should.
Okay. So Abby had read this blog post. It's not you. Ozempic is making us smoke, but at least we're being honest. And she wanted to know our take on smoking, basically. Is smoking cool again? Why? Why is it cool again? Do we smoke? Will it get more common in 2025? I'll say this. Smoking is always and never cool.
I thought you were just going to say smoking kills.
Well, it does.
I'm not sure about
so is everything
the else. Causation versus correlation between Ozempic and smoking.
Yeah.
Both obviously are appetite suppressants. Although Ozempic, I mean, it suppresses your ability to eat. I don't know. People still get hungry.
You wouldn't know.
Malignant, but should. Smoking, I don't smoke. I'm not a smoker, and I don't vape. And despite the fact that we've joked about Zyn a lot on this podcast, I've only done Zyn a few times, and the last time it made my heart speed up a lot, and I didn't like that. But I will have like a social cigarette at a party, and sometimes like if there's a period where there's a period one summer where my husband and I were staying in Carroll Gardens and we hosted a lot of parties. And
did you smoke inside?
No, it wasn't our apartment. That would have been very frowned upon. But just like if you're hosting, you just buy a box of cigarettes, like kind of like at the beginning of the summer. And then they just kind of get used. Like you just give them out.
When you say a box, do you mean a carton?
Yeah, a carton. Yeah. Okay, so you can tell I don't smoke.
Yeah.
And like I also just have like no strong opinion on it. So like if I have to go in and say something, I just say Blue American Spirits.
That's a classic.
So yeah, and then like that, but that box can just like sit around, and I have no impulse to like smoke
that's
all of
chic.
Them. So definitely not an addictive thing, at least for me in that regard. It's not my relationship to it, but I will say like, if I have had, I'm also not a big drinker, but if I had like a couple drinks and I smell one, it's like the pie on the windowsill. You know what I mean? I'm just like following it. So
I'm similar these days. I do not want a sober cig. And if I smell cig when I'm sober, I hate it. But every weekend, tonight, as we record this, I'm going to a friend's birthday dinner. Wine will be drunk. Guarantee I'll smoke probably 3 cigarettes tonight.
You know, it's hard being the only woman with the correct relationship to person, even like the correct relationship to drugs and alcohol, but like somebody has to do it.
Somebody has to do it. It's on this podcast, it's not me. I'm a non-practicing smoker now. I've been smoking on and off for 11 years or so. I hated cigarettes. I thought the cigarettes were disgusting when I was a teenager. Still do. But then I started smoking abbreviated history here. I started smoking in sophomore year of college, really. Freshman a little bit, but then sophomore was when I started buying packs because my roommate smoked, and we would go to the DSA, the designated smoking area.
And the Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah. And he was like, you got to stop bumming. You have to buy your own. So I did. My peak of smoking was when I was a dishwasher, when I was dishwasher prep cook, when I was 22. I got up to half a pack a day of yellow spirits, which yellow spirits, because they last longer. I got to the point where I could smoke two on a, you know, little break from dishwashing within 10 minutes. And then,
well, you have to. That's the only way to take breaks when you work in the service industry.
That's how you justify it. Yeah. These days, I haven't bought a pack for like a year or so, but I bum a pack's worth probably over the course of a month or so from friends. A lot of my friends do smoke, and so I like the like drunk cigarette. I think it's to take it away from the personal back to like more the trend idea. It comes back to this like frictionless culture we've talked about. Cigarettes are cool in as much as they introduce friction to your life, right? Like it's hard to smoke. They smell, like you have to go outside to do it unless you are in Europe or something. And they could kill you. It's like literally the smoke is, the friction of the smoke in your lungs compared to like a vape. So I think if cigarettes are cool, what's cool about them is that they're a high friction consumable.
Well, the funniest thing about buying cigarettes is when it's like so impulsive that you have to buy a Bic lighter at the same time.
Yeah. More bodegas should have matches for you to take.
Oh, you prefer to light yours with a match?
No, I prefer to light it with a lighter, but I'm just...
Oh, because the matches would be free.
So you could just take one, but of course they want to make a profit on you. So
another branding opportunity gone to waste.
Yeah.
Who has the best matchbooks in the city?
Ernesto's. Easy answer.
Why?
They are so nice. They're luxurious. They're like these kind of one, instead of like a double layered thing, they're kind of like just wide. It's all 20 laid out. They're red. They light really well and burn really efficiently. I've never, there's only like a few matchbook templates. I've never seen a matchbook like Ernesto's. Look them up. Just, I don't know if you can Google it, whatever. Go to their
Instagram. I'm looking it up and I'm Googling it.
Yeah, she's looking it up. She's good. What is this? A cake
look
song?
It up,
she's looking it up. She's Googling it now. Yeah, really luxurious matches.
Oh, you can get a framed one on Etsy.
A frame?
It's only $100. Is that what you want for Christmas?
What? Specifically of these matches?
Yeah, come on. You can buy anything on Etsy. It's like, oh, you know, because if like you're like
restaurant?
My partner and I, that's like where our first date was. Let me get a framed
one
for her for Christmas.
True.
Not me, somebody else. Well, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but like 7 years ago, 8 years ago, even maybe more. I went to Llama Inn when it was like had just opened.
Is that the one in Williamsburg or the one in the West Village?
It was Williamsburg.
Yeah, because they've got like a
Argentinian steakhouse. Is that what's
no? It's not. It's a Nikkei cuisine. It's Peruvian Japanese.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Tom, cut that. It was a while ago. In my defense, it was a while ago. Anyway, they had like these hot pink matchbooks with llamas on them. And I don't know why they're sticking out in my mind. I think probably I stole maybe about 20 of them and used them for a very long time.
Okay. Should we move on from smoking?
Yeah, we can move on from smoking.
Should we stub this?
We could stub this. Colin sent in a pretty hefty question.
Yeah.
Colin wants to know, what are some other media that he should be consuming that informs our worldview and interests, specifically like podcasts and newsletters, but it could apply to other as well. So this question made me sort of self-conscious because it made me realize that like my information diet is not that great right now.
I had a similar feeling.
I do consume a lot of information. I think I'm still getting a lot of it from Twitter, despite the fact that it's not functioning that well. I think I do have some Substack fatigue, but if you were talking about like what actually informs my worldview versus what I actually read, it's not the same question.
That's true.
Right. And in terms of things that I read like every day, I really want to read everyone. There's very few. So I really like The Fence, which is a magazine out of London. I think I've talked about them before.
Yeah, I follow them on Twitter, but I've never read anything they've put out.
Yeah, I mean, I think I read maybe not every newsletter. Actually, we syndicated from them, and there was an essay about getting divorced that made our Reader's Choice list for Dirt that was actually a syndication from The Fence, which was pretty cool. SIC, which is Ben Dietz's. Ben Dietz,
you're on the pod.
Link curation. I just think it's very well curated. I discover a lot of stuff there.
Can we talk about that for a second? Because I open every issue he sends, but I'm like, and I'll read the first bit, but it's like overwhelming for me how many links he puts in. And I know he's like talked about this. He actually has reduced the amount in the past few months, but it's like, it's just so over. This brings us back full circle to the completist thing. Like, I'm somebody who, you know, likes to click every link or whatever. So I don't, obviously, with that, but sometimes it's like, let me just like, it's like when you like, you know, close your eyes and throw a dart at a map. That's kind of how his newsletter is for me.
You're
where it's like, let me just click one
pressure.
Thing. No, but not even the pressure. It's like, there's so much where it's like, I have to choose not to feel the pressure. And you just like, whatever, I'll check out this link.
I would say I skim pretty quickly. I will say, like,
it's so impressive how he's able to bring that all together, though.
It's like, great. So, and he has scouts, and I always like to, like, the first thing I do is check and see if Dirt's linked. But
you were this week.
I've gotten very good at, I think people with taste are good at figuring out what they're interested in or not interested in, like that discernment, but not necessarily quickly. I think the difference between me and somebody else who like works in something that's like taste making is like, I'm fast. Like within the first two sentences of a pitch, I can tell if I'm going to commission it. Within the first like few notes of a song, I can tell if I like it. I can like read that and say, okay, this, I want to read this. I want to read this. I want to read this and nothing else.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wouldn't say being fast is good because obviously you miss things, but I feel like there are people who are decisive and there's people who are discerning, but right now, like, I think in order to operate like effectively in media, you actually have to be decisive and discerning just because of the sheer amount of information. And that's something like that I'm trying to cultivate. But I don't know that that necessarily comes through in my information diet. I think I need to reflect a little bit. I also read Feed Me, which is Emily Sundberg's newsletter every day. I read mostly every issue of The Sociology of Business by Anna Angelic. And then there's a couple of more literary newsletters that I read every issue, one by a writer named Laurie Stone and the other one by Charlotte Shane. But that's like, I think what tripped me up about this is like worldview.
Yeah.
Because
it's not that your worldview is being newly formed every day. And every time you read, like for me, when I think of like the formation of my worldview, it still is very rooted in like, you know, things I read in college and stuff. It's not so much now. There are things that like manicure it and like tune it slightly. But I don't know.
Your worldview could just as easily be represented by like what you don't read and what you tune out.
That's true. I would say though,
a lot.
A couple, like when I was trying to think of newsletters, I read every issue of, there's not so many, like there's so many newsletters that I open and read part of, or like that I'll read every third issue, whatever. But one, like Ryan Broderick's Garbage Day, I actually tend to read all of that one. Taylor Lorenz's User Mag and Rachel Carton's Lincoln Bio are two I really respect, but like I won't always read all of, especially with like Taylor's, because similar to Ryan Broderick's, it's like, or like Max Reed, or I can keep naming names. There's so many people that like are generally covering the same things, but like from a slightly different perspective, and like, one person's covering it the day of, the next person's the next, et cetera. So like that, I get kind of bogged down and like, I don't need to read all this. But those are a few. One that I really like that I found because he, I think, subscribed to Creator Spotlight and like replied to the welcome email, Ryan Rigney's Push to Talk. He's this guy who works in like video game marketing. And he just recently, like a month or so ago, got hired by Andreessen Horowitz. Now he works for them. But it's like a weekly thing where like usually about video game marketing or something, but he also writes more about like content on the internet and like kind of some of the similar stuff that I cover and I'm interested in with Creator Spotlight about like gatekeeping and algorithms, whatever. And I like it because it is kind of like this, like, he's really smart. He's a good writer. And it is a bit of this personal blog type thing. But I'm always impressed how it's like every week he's put out this really great essay and I never hear other people talking about it. So I'm like, I like this because it's not just the same thing that everybody else is reading about and tweeting about. So shout out to him. I would recommend Ryan Rigney's Push to Talk newsletter podcasts that inform my worldview. I don't know. Like the one podcast that I listen to, like in like a work sense, is the Colin and Samir show. I think they do a good job of like doing this kind of like creator research that I also do. They've been doing it for much longer and they're probably better at it. I'd say TrueAnon. I do really like TrueAnon. It was the first podcast I actually listened to a lot in 2020 when I started listening to podcasts. I don't listen to it so much anymore. We'll like listen to it like on road trips. Emma and I will listen to it together. But I think there's such, it's so funny. They're really good researchers. I do often learn things from them.
I've been off podcasts, but you know that I am a fan of How Long Gone.
Me too. I still listen to a lot of
How Long Gone. It also depends on the guest. You know what I mean? If I'm like not, if I'm going through a period of time where I'm not listening to a lot of podcasts, like, I think when I'm driving, I go between wanting to listen to podcasts, not wanting to listen to music. Then I just go by guest. But I did run into Chris Black recently. I was having drinks with my friend Olive Leatherwood, who's a very...
Wow, that's a great... Olive Leatherwood is a great name.
Olive is a PR powerhouse. She's ex-Condé Nast. How could you not be with a name like that? And, you know, she's... friends with Chris. Anyway, I was telling her that I had emailed Chris about something, and as the words Chris Black were coming out of my mouth, he walked in and sat down on the table next to us.
Oh my god. Where were you? What restaurant was
it? Which is like, why now I understand why people who live in New York are running into each other all the time. Corner bar. That was funny. And she was like, did we summon you? Like, how did that even work? I've been off the podcast bandwagon, but I did listen to Banditza's sick podcast with Michael Miraflor.
I have that open in a tab. I've been meaning to.
I think they did address the Jaguar ad campaign.
Michael was talking about it a lot on Twitter. He had some good opinions about it.
Well, I don't know. You and I got into this a little bit on the Creator Spotlight episode I did with you that should release around the time this releases. Maybe after.
It will be out a few days later than this.
We're in a bit of a primordial soup moment.
I love the primordial soup thing. Listen to the Creator Spotlight episode with Daisy in a few days. You'll know.
Sometimes, like, also, I'm just really focused on my own output and I'm not absorbing as much information. And I guess it's good not to go too far in either direction. I don't like to be reactive. I don't like to be derivative, but it is good to have access to the way other people think. And I think, like, this year, I wanted more of that to come from books.
100% agree.
Yeah. Good.
I've been like, I'm a big believer in like, you should look at like what other people are doing and like in whatever it is that you're doing, but you shouldn't spend too much time doing that lest you like kind of, you know, when you stand on the edge of like a cliff and you want to like lean over and fall over, like that's what happens if you like are just looking what other people are doing. You're like, I just want to do that. And then you start just kind of not having original thoughts, or I don't personally. I've definitely been prioritizing reading books.
Well, this morning, before I got on this podcast, we're pre-recording, so we've been out for a bit. But at 9 a.m. this morning, the day we recorded, I interviewed Colette Shade about her new essay collection, Y2K.
Tell me about it. I don't know anything about this.
Okay, so it's like a combination of a collection of personal essays and sort of like a decade book in the style of Chuck Klosterman's 90s. It looks at like Y2K through various cultural touchstones as like jumping off points to, you know, like what was the real aesthetic and value system that ran through that time period and how did it affect her coming of age? Everything from like the Starbucks Frappuccino to the introduction of the SUV. I really enjoyed it. And one of the things I was talking about with her is this sort of relates to information diet. I, this morning, even before I did that, woke up at 6 a.m. to do Dirt's Year in Review. And, you know, just going through everything that happened over the last year, I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot about some of this stuff. And it was fully consuming at the time. And I don't think I necessarily forgot about it because it wasn't interesting. And our readers probably remember and experience things that we did differently than I remember and experience them. But I think I was asking her, do you have the same thing with your book? Because you finish a book or an essay writing it, and then you can't look, there's a period where you just can't look at it. But then you come back to it and you're like, you're looking at it from some distance and you're like, wow, this is pretty good. But you're also like, on some level, like, this. I actually don't remember doing this. Like, the person who did this was like a different person. Mm-hmm. And that was 3 months ago. So it's funny, like, what information that you actually retain and sticks with you, and what of your own output sticks with you, is shocking. And that's like, I mean, part of it's the nature of memory, but
I really like that. No, this is, this reminds me of something. When I was preparing for the Josh Citarella episode, I read an essay of his where he was talking about how, like, you know, 10 years ago when he and his friends were doing jogging and like the bread koozie or whatever, and they were just like messing around, making silly images in their studio and like having beers, like he was doing that. And then he was doing the more serious, like photography driven art, like where he was doing shows about it and whatever. And he's like, looking back, it's like me fucking around with my friends and making these silly things was actually more important and more like influential to the arc of my life and my career than the more serious photography stuff. And it was kind of like framed as giving advice to younger artists of like, you know, don't like, just do the stuff, participate in it. You don't know like what later on will be what's more important. And my last thing is just like, okay, that's kind of what you're saying with like the writing, where it's like, I'll go back and like read something I wrote a couple years ago. I'm like, wow, that was really good. And I like didn't think it was so good. I don't know. The distance, love having distance against my own work.
So I wrote this piece. I don't know what year it actually published. It was originally supposed to be for Lapham's Quarterly, but mm-hmm. They wanted a more research intensive thing. I ended up publishing it in like this food blog that I don't even remember the name of, doesn't exist anymore. In November 2019, I got an email from a woman named Lenore who really liked the piece. And the piece was called Consider the Lemon. And it was about the process of the upkeep of Joseph Beuys's Capri battery, which is basically like an organic real lemon with a light bulb plugged into it.
Yeah.
And Lenore emailed me in 2019 about it. I actually rarely get fan mail. At the time, I was really touched and I said, thank you. Literally, this is November 2019. Literally November 2024, Lenore just emailed me again. Said it's 5 years later. The article's not online anymore. I was telling my friend about it. Can you send it to me?
Wow.
And I had to go back into my Google Docs and be like, so I think this is the final draft. And I'm not sure what they were talking about, but if I had to guess, it was around the time they auctioned off Maurizio Catalan's banana taped to a wall. And a lot of people were like, wait, how often is the banana changed?
Yeah.
And it was one of those like difficult art questions, which is why Capri Battery was so interesting to me, because I talked to people who curated it about where they buy the lemons, the credentials for it, like, you know, is it come from the grocery store near the museum? And like, when is it in season? And where do these lemons come from? Do they come from Mexico? Whatever. Anyway, you could ask all the same questions about Maurizio Catalan's banana piece. And I don't know if that's why Lenore reached out. I didn't ask her, but I did send back the best draft of it that I had. You know, it wasn't even on Wayback Machine, and it took me a really long time to even remember what the original blog was called. All of which is like a long way of saying, like, is that the most memorable thing I've ever written to me?
Yeah.
No, I mean, probably not. But it was really significant to somebody who reached out 5 years later about it. And also like highlighted the fact that actually there's no archive of it, or I have the archive of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that type of interaction, like, to me is very memorable, because I have so little feedback. I don't think people understand. I've been talking about this a lot recently. People don't understand that like Twitter was a really big feedback mechanism for cultural criticism and the type of digital media work. It was never a big source of traffic, but it was a big source of feedback. the changes that have happened on Twitter have like sort of removed that feedback loop. It's really not an effective way to understand how our work is resonating with our audience. Mm-hmm. But the way that people experience newsletters, some people will reply to a newsletter and say, I really liked this one. Most people don't. Mm-hmm. And so right now, like other than quantitative analytics, I actually don't really know how the work that we put out through Dirt is landing with our readers in real time until they tell us or unless they tell us. And so when we did the Reader's Choice Awards, some of the things that resonated with people, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense that that was the most popular piece. Other things I was like, wow, I wouldn't have thought that this would have stuck with somebody so intensely that they would consider it like, you know, the biggest mood shift they had reading something this year. And so that's like an ongoing problem for me. And I think like, I do think it's an ongoing problem even for people who are on Substack that have that like notes feature.
Yeah,
like
I know comment section.
Brandon Taylor wrote recently, like he was leaving Substack because he found that feature to be really overwhelming and not really helpful to his experience of his audience. And then like Substack reached out and I guess like turned it off for him. Huh. But that's like not, to me, that's not a good enough reason to be on Substack with all of the drawbacks. And so, yeah, I've been wondering how much to say, like whether to say in a newsletter, like, by the way, like we don't know what you think. Yeah. Unless you tell us.
Wait, I very much relate to this. Like I get a couple anywhere from like 2 to like 12, rarely 12, like thoughtful responses when I send out Twitter Spotlight. And there's like, this will be on like 90,000 opens, you know, who knows how many people are actually reading. Yeah. It, but like, and it's so, when I do get those replies, it's so nice. When I interviewed earlier this year, Andrew Huang, who's this like big YouTuber, and I asked him like, well, what advice would you give to, you know, anybody, people creating in any medium on the internet? He was like, always tell people like in the video, like, remember to subscribe. Like always just say that. Like, he's like, there's been so many times where I'm watching something and then like later on, I'm like, what was that? And I don't remember because I didn't subscribe because they didn't tell me to subscribe. But when they do, I do it. And I think this is similar with like, you have to put in like that CTA to like comment on this piece or reply to this piece. And like the last time I did that, I got more replies and more thoughtful replies than usual. And like, cause I read so many, you know, I read so much every day and I rarely comment and I rarely reply. And I've been trying to make myself do it more because it's like, well, if I want people to do this, I should do it too. And like feel what this experience is. But that is the thing about email is like, you know, especially cause when people do reply, it's just a one-to-one reply. So other people don't see it. So that's not like encouraging that the social action, right?
Well, we also have Discord, Discord watering hole, and there's about 2,000 people in there, not 2,000 active people, but yeah. You get some good feedback there. Well, a lot of times people tell the writer and they don't tell me, which is good. It's like definitely if you're going to tell somebody that you enjoyed the work, tell the writer. But depending on how close I am to the writer, sometimes the writer trickles back to me and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, like Michelle Santiago Cortez was on a panel for Lux magazine. She's like, people have been coming up to me telling me they loved my essay about my Sanrio machete. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I would not have known that till it came up in like the Reader's Choice at the end of the year. But her and I, you know, have a close relationship and we text almost every day. So, you know, I'm glad people told the writer, but if the writer doesn't tell me, I'm like,
guess that was a terrible guess. Yeah.
No, I never think it was terrible.
Not terrible, but it's like, guess nobody cared that much because you still see the open rate. Anyways.
Yes, always see the open rate. Yeah.
We should move on to another question.
Yeah, we should.
What's the next one?
Well, so we have a series of questions from Madeline that are or Madeline, I apologize if I'm getting it wrong. These are very synesthetic questions.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed thinking about these. So
me too.
They asked I'm just gonna list them off. Yeah. So the greenest book we read this year, the purplest movie, orangest podcast, and then a song that we would consider to be like dirty brown. So I spent some time thinking through this morning. I, as you know, read a lot of Joe Brainard this year, and I feel
it
like
it was even mentioned in your New York Times profile that you did.
Oh my God. Yeah. So I read his collected writings, and then I also read just came out, a collection of his letters. And we excerpted a couple of them in Dirt. So I consider this to be a very green book because he's often like lounging in the backyard of friends' homes, like in, mm-hmm. like the Hamptons or Vermont. So, and like it's reflected in his writing or letters. He'll be like, I'm sunning myself. So that I would say like greenest book was like Joe Brainard. Yeah. Purplest movie, Megalopolis, because I consider
I still need to see it.
You gotta see it. It's a very royal color. It's a very maximalist color. And this movie is like just, it's everything. It's maximalism dialed to the greatest extent. And we had a great conversation with David Rudnick about that.
Listen to the episode. Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely listen to that episode. I feel like this is the Orangest podcast. Maybe because of our art.
Definitely because of the art. That's part of it. But.
Well, speaking of Chuck Klosterman and How Long Gone, unless I'm remembering incorrectly, I feel like their interview with him starts off with some color theory. He talks about orange being his favorite color. And orange is supposed to represent like never being satisfied. And I was like, well, that's interesting because orange is one of my favorite colors. And actually right now I'm sitting because I'm recording in the kitchen today. I don't know if you can see Francis, but
I can't.
I'll have to pick it up. I have a set of Thinet chairs that are orange and I got a very good deal on a set of four. Maybe I think because they are orange and I have a lot of orange in my home. And Thinet chairs are very beautifully designed chair, not very comfortable.
Do you see this orange here?
No, I can't see. You got to shift.
Oh, I've got a little Heath Bud vase there.
There you go. Oh. So yeah, we're two people that are never satisfied. And then I chose for the Dirty Brown song, I was listening to producer singer named Sega Bodega.
Oh, familiar.
One of their songs, Your Teeth, was on my favorites of the year. But as I was looking through this morning, I realized they also did a song called Cicada featuring Arca, which is very on brand for me. And they have a song called Dirt. they also have a 2020 compilation or a 2024 compilation of covers. I think they started doing in 2020. That are really amazing and unique. Like they covered White Flag by Dido, Cool by Gwen Stefani, and then like Massey Stars Fade Into You in like a very unique way.
Yeah.
And some more songs that I'm forgetting about. Oh, and Teardrop by Massive Attack, which I mean, that's a song that just cannot possibly be improved upon. But sort of my color theory.
That was good. I'll do mine. For the greenest book, I'm going to go with, we've talked about this a bit on the pod. I'm going to go with Triumph of the Yuppies, America, the 80s, and the Creation of an Unequal Nation by Tom McGrath, because it's about money, purely because it's about money. It wasn't the best book I read this year, but
they should be paying you for the amount of marketing you've done for that book at this point on this podcast.
They should. But my favorite books I've read this year, fiction was Martyr by Kaveh Akbar.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So really good. I loved it. And then nonfiction was Dirt by Bill Buford, which we've also talked about.
I need to read that.
You should. You have to read it.
Did we talk about Among the Thugs?
We have. Yeah. Okay. Which is the first one I read. I read that one like 9 years ago or so. Also so good. Movies. The Purplest Movie. I of course went back through my Letterboxd to remember what I watched this year. I'm going to mention three movies for Purplest. They could all be this. La Chimera. We've been talking about that already. That one is just the purpleness of like the otherworldly, the kind of mystical thing, I think really fits for that one. But I'm also going to say Punch Drunk Love, which I'd never seen before this year. And it's probably my favorite movie I watched this year. It's just so good. And like, it's so beautifully colorful. It's just like, I don't know who the cinematographer was on that, but it's just such a good movie. You have to see it. It's so good. And it's a tight 90.
Love a tight 90.
And then last one, this one, like also, okay, I guess purple-ish, Red Rooms. Are you familiar with this movie?
No.
Is
this an A24 joint?
No, I don't think it's A24. It's like I think it was 2023, but it's a Quebecois movie. And it's like kind of about like internet violence, internet extremism, and like being numb to violence on the internet and that kind of thing. But that's one that definitely sticks with me for being just like, I don't think I'd ever watched any French Canadian movies before. So maybe that it stands up for that. But lasting impact on me. Brownest, Dirtiest, the dirtiest song. I'm going to go with one I've been listening to on repeat a lot recently, which is Stella Duende Mix by Mirror System from 2005, which is one that Apple Music
my favorites.
Algorithm gave me. It's really good. I think dirty, when I was looking through my songs, dirtiest song, dirtiest Brown song. That one really fit. Again, kind of the art probably influencing that, but also the vibe. But another one that's like, didn't quite like, when I was just thinking of like favorite songs this year, but one I've liked a lot is Better Way to Live by Kneecap featuring Green Chatten from Fontaines, D.C.
Mm.
If there's a better way to live, I gotta have it. So good. Podcast.
Okay, wait, you sold me on that one. Okay.
Yeah, it's really good.
And I'm favoriting this one too.
Good. Orange's podcast. I don't know. When I try to think of like, because so much of my podcast listening is so ephemeral, you know, weekly thing. Like my main podcast is like a soccer podcast that comes out 3 times a week. But I'm going to say the most lasting piece of podcast I listened to this year was Truanon's 5-part piece on Synanon, which those episodes are like a couple years old, I think. But it's just like such good narrative research podcasting about like this group Synanon from the 50s, out of which comes like this kind of like fucked up, like immersive, abusive, those like therapy programs where they send kids out in the desert that are really just abuse, and like Alcoholics Anonymous. Really dark, really good podcast series.
Well, last order of business, we have a question from your fiance.
Yes, that is. What sucks the most? I'm going to say, when I read this, I thought about Elon Musk and his Twitter presence. I blocked him on Twitter this year because
Did that work?
I don't see it. I just, and people will quote tweet something or whatever, and then I'll sometimes click view, but I was just like, our previous episode, things that are underhyped, blocking on social media. I've started doing this on Instagram too. I spend too much time on Instagram reels. Mm-hmm. And if I keep getting something where I'm just like, this is a negative presence in my life, I need to stop seeing these, I block. And so I've been doing that a bit on Twitter too. So Elon's account, I'm already going to read about him and what he's doing and et cetera in Read Max or in Garbage Day or whatever, right? So it's like, I just don't need to, I can see a little less. What sucks the most for me?
I would say what sucks the most is the passage of time and the non-passage of time.
Okay, explain.
The passage of time sucks when you are having a good experience or, you know, enjoying your life, and the finiteness of that experience is revealed by the passage of time.
Yeah.
But when you experience something that you want to create distance from, the non-passage of time is an issue, right? Yeah. Because there's certain things that really can only be resolved with the passage of time. And so I think what sucks is you rarely get the passage of time that you want. I guess we all get the passage of time that we deserve.
That we deserve. Well, you know, I think I quoted this either at the beginning of this episode or last episode, Lennon, when he said
it was this episode.
It was this episode. There are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks where decades happen.
Ain't that the truth?
I think that's kind of what you're talking about there. I will say, one more thing I want to add to kind of Madeline's Greenest Book, whatever questions. She didn't ask this, but kind of, you know, your least favorite ongoing segment that I do on this podcast is where I talk about Instagram reels I watch. So
Tony,
I want to give,
I knew you were going to say something about Tony.
I want to give my best Instagram reel account of the year and my worst one. Best is at Taku, T-A-K-U, Taku Woodcraft. He's this Japanese carpenter, woodcrafter, has 1.5 million followers. If you read his description, his profile says no words, no music, no face. That's my policy. And it's just the most amazing, perfect videos where it'll say like reel number 773 or whatever, where he just like, again, no face, whatever, just a close up of the wood. It's just like, here's how I figured out a way to make this specific like joinery joint thing. And he just does it. And it's like, wow, this is so beautiful. This is good content. This is good to watch. It's like somebody practicing a craft at the highest level. Just like 30 seconds of it.
It's the opposite of filler.
The worst is kind of two candidates. One is like one of those secondhand clips industry kind of things where it's this guy, I don't really know who he is, Luke Belmar. He's one of these like hustle type bros where he's like, like one of the segments I'll often get is he's like, bro, I was at Tate's house last night and like I knew, like speaking of like Andrew Tristan Tate, whatever, he's like, I knew he liked Johnny Walker, so I brought him the bottle of Johnny Walker. Like, you're not watching enough, you're not reading enough books on sale. Like, it's just like so noxious. Anyways, that's less interesting. But
blocked.
The other guy that I have yet to block because it fascinates me a little bit is the Schooner Scorer. Mm. Are you familiar with this guy?
Nope.
Good. So he's this like, I guess you would describe him as Tory, this very Tory British man, skinny. He's always wearing like the barber jacket or similar. And he like skids up to like some bar on a Lime bike. He could be in London, as he usually is, could be in New York, could be on safari somewhere on the African continent. But he basically comes up and he's like handed a beer, and the cameraman is doing all this like zooming in and out and shaking it. And he just talks so fast, and he's like, and he'll take a bit of a sip of the beer. So a schooner, I guess, is like a 10-ounce or so glass of beer. Mm. And he'll take a sip. So it gets down to there. He's like, he'll describe the taste. He's like, one sip, one schooner. Let's see the score. And then he'll chug it. And then it's like the music kicks in, and it's like the camera's just like going like so hectic. And then he talks about it. And I'm transfixed. I'm like so fascinated. But I hate it too. It's like such slop that just is like drilling into my brain.
Yeah, I really hate that. Wow.
That's terrible. Anything else we need to cover in this New Year's Day episode?
Well, I forgot to mention something that I think is underrated, which is when dogs have eyebrows that are really just a dot.
they do have that. And it's like the little bump. It's like a little horn almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do love that. That's
more
such
of that,
a nice
please,
thing for dogs.
In 2025.
More dog eyebrows 2024. What is this meep bullshit?
Ew. Why would you say that to me?
I thought that was Meep. Meep is the new Twee.
No. Well, oh, Meep? No Meep. Way. No, we're not right? doing Meep.
No, we're not Meep doing discourse. Meep. Okay. No.
Is it called Meep Land or is it called Tasteland?
It's called Tasteland. It is. And this has been Tasteland.
See you next week.
See you next week. Thank you.